I'm chatting today with Professor Steve Robson, who is the president of the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Good morning, Steve, and thank you for your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Kate.
You and Caroline DaCosta have co-authored a narrative review on caesarean section rates. Why is it important to have a look at that now? What's particularly brought that subject up for you?
I think the thing that stimulated us was that the recommendation has been around in various forms for almost a little bit over 30 years now. And a lot of people didn't really have a clear understanding of where the recommendation came from in the first place and what it was all about. Okay. So we wanted to take a step back and just explain or look at why it came into play in the first place, and really, did it have a lot of meaning for women and for clinical practice?
Yeah, that's the recommendation, yeah, that we keep the rate at 15%. Is anybody getting close to that rate?
Well, a lot of people are, but they're not really in developed countries. I mean, overall, if you look nationally, most of the countries that have rates that would fulfil that tend to be, in general, developing countries, and they're not strictly comparable with places like Australia.
No.
I recently spent some time in Papua New Guinea, for example, where the caesarean section rate is somewhere less than 5%.
Wow.
But one of the huge drivers of a caesarean section rate that low is that if women go from Port Moresby back out to the Highlands, for example, to a village,
yep,
and they've subsequently labour after they've had a caesarean section, it's a potential disaster. The uterus can rupture and that can kill the mother,
yep,
and the baby. So there's this enormous drive to save lives to reduce that caesarean section rate. So what that means is that whereas in Australia we might find certain situations, for example, if an instrumental delivery isn't obviously working, people will do a caesarean section. In PNG, if you're trying to deliver a baby with a ventouse and the head's not coming out,
mm-hmm,
then you get several midwives to push on the tummy from above, and if that's not working, then you actually cut in and open up the pelvis surgically so the baby will fit out. So it's really not a sort of practice that would be recognisable to women or to doctors in Australia.
Wow.
So I think there are, different standards, different motivators and different resources, the access to caesarean section, the access to safe practice in many areas of developing countries like PNG is not the same that women have access to in Australia.
What's our rate here in Australia?
Overall, nationally, it's around about 32%, but it varies. It's a little bit lower in public hospitals. It's a bit higher in private hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And it varies a little bit between regions as well. But if you look at the total overall added up national rate in Australia, it's around about roughly 1 in 3.
Has that rate been on the increase?
It was on the increase for a long time. And if you look at what's happened over the last 20 to 25 years, there was a big increase. But over the last few years, that's very much stabilised. In some age groups in Australia, there's been no significant increase in the rate for a couple of years now. So it appears to have reached a plateau.
What effect has, we hear a lot about the obesity pandemic, etc. What sort of effect has that had on our caesarean rates?
Well, we know very well that women who are overweight and obese in particular are more likely to run into pregnancy problems and, mm-hmm, are more likely to end up being delivered by caesarean section. So as the prevalence of obesity is increased across the country, and I think as many as a third of women are overweight or obese when they're having a baby in Australia. That's been a complete change over the last 20 years. You know,
yeah,
it was when I first started training, it was more unusual to have a woman who was obese, who was pregnant in labour, but now it's just essentially an everyday occurrence. And that's been a big change in the demographics, in the way that labour has to be managed, in the way that delivery can occur. So it's been a really big change.
What about a woman's age at first birth? Is that had an effect as well?
Well, it is a very, very strong player. And I was involved in some research from South Australia,
mm-hmm,
that we published a couple of years ago. And when we looked at all of the different factors that came into play and that had affected the rate of caesarean section over about a 20-year period in South Australia, it seemed that you could explain, more than two-thirds of the increase purely by an increase in the demographics, in women having babies older, particularly their first baby, because if your first baby is born by caesarean section, the overwhelmingly most likely outcome for you is that all your subsequent babies will be delivered by cesarean section. Whereas if your first baby is a vaginal birth, just about all your subsequent babies are likely to be vaginal. So having babies in women who are older and who are bigger, having their first baby just has this huge effect downstream on how subsequent babies will be born. And that, of course, plays out in a big way in the cesarean section rate.
Is it a bad thing that women are having more Caesars? Are there consequences for their own health going forward?
I think you need to look at it in two ways. If you say acutely are women more likely to have complications having a cesarean section at term? Well, a little bit, absolutely. But you have to remember that you can also have extremely traumatic vaginal deliveries as well.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a, like everything, a bit of a trade-off. The big thing that Caroline and I wanted to consider in the paper that we wrote for the MJA was to say, well, what about downstream? And certainly one of the things that's become very clear with some large studies from around the world is that having vaginal births makes you more likely to have prolapse and incontinence later in life.
Right,
and studies from the US suggest that, something like almost a fifth of all women will end up having some sort of surgical procedure for prolapse and incontinence. And those things are almost unheard of if you have a cesarean section. And of course, if you have a cesarean, you tend to be young, it tends to go well. Whereas if you have surgery for prolapse or incontinence, it tends to be in a much older age group. When you're less fit for surgery, there's quite a reasonable reoperation rate of complications and things like that. So in some respects, we made the point that, yes, if you avoid a cesarean section when you are young, you are probably more likely to end up having a more difficult, more complicated operation when you are less able to cope with it later in life. And again, that's just that trade-off, and that's something that is not in any way reflected in the WHO recommendation.
So what do we do now? Do we ignore the WHO recommendations completely, or do we reset them, or do we need them at all?
The point that we try to make is that there is no right answer, and I think you have to consider the woman and her situation and her family that you're dealing with at the time. And I think women have always been part of the conversation, but I don't think we can limit the conversation to the time around the birth. I think you have to take a broader approach, as we do in everything, and say, well, look, there are immediate pros and cons, but there are also downstream pros and cons. And I think a very broad conversation has to be entered. Now, if somebody is planning to have a big family, there's no doubt that having 3, 4, 5 cesarean sections begins to increase really important risks, like those of a placenta accreta that's potentially deadly. But very few women actually have that many children by cesarean section. And most women in Australia will have probably 2 children, at the most 3. So it's not particularly relevant to the individual woman. But again, it plays into the fact that you have to take the time to discuss the woman's entire situation and what their plans are for the future. And women having babies in their late 30s, early 40s are just not going to have big families. It's not possible because of their age group. Yeah. So I think reasoning is different to the way it was 20 or 25 years ago when the WHO recommendation very first came out.
Yes. What role do primary care physicians have in all this?
Well, I think primary care doctors are fundamental to pregnancy care in the country. In fact, it's hard to imagine a more important group, because most women will spend time with their family doctor before they get pregnant, and that's the time to do important things like say, look, you probably shouldn't get pregnant until you lose some weight.
Yep.
Or more importantly, when a woman in her early 20s sees the family doctor, it's really important that they're made aware that it's actually not that easy to get pregnant if you delay it until you're in your late 30s and early 40s. And if you're going to try to become pregnant, you have to be as healthy as you possibly can when that happens. So I think the strongest influence of all is general practitioners, is family doctors who are helping and dealing with women all the time and helping put all of these things in perspective for it. It's just critical.
If you had a magic wand and you could change something about this issue immediately, what would you change?
I'd change the age at which women have their babies. Mm. If there was some way society could be set up to make it supportive and equitable and just generally the right time to have a family when women are in their early 20s, I think most of these problems would completely disappear and become history. But we don't have that. And no. The older you get, the more chance there is for something to go wrong, the more chance for women to gain weight and things like that. So I reckon if my magic wand was a time machine, it would make all women, you know, it would be practical and convenient for their lives to have babies in their early 20s. And I reckon we wouldn't even be talking about the whole issue. Lovely talking to you, Kat.
Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah.